วยไทยคือชีวิต
From our studios in New York City and Miami, Florida You are listening to The Striking Corner With Eric Rivera and Vinny Scotto Your source for Muay Thai and kickboxing news worldwide
What's up? Happy New Year 2016. Made it out of the holidays. What is up, Vinny? How are you doing, man? How was your holiday season, man? Everything good? Christmas, New Year's?
I was just jamming out to that. Remind me like some like Wu-Tang type shit.
Yeah, man. We got to have that little Thai inspiration. That's what I'm trying to do now with the music.
Play it again.
What?
I want to hear it again.
All right, hold on. On your request, man. I know you liked it. Hold up. All right, that's enough, man.
Yeah, we're good.
So what's up, man?
How's everything?
Good. 2016, starting off with a bang, doing the final, our first episode in 2016. Pretty happy to get back to it, man. And besides that, man, holidays pretty standard. My little boy's first holiday, so that was pretty cool. That's nice. Celebrating the first holiday with the little one and kind of him looking around and not knowing really what was going on. and then all the gifts were for him. Like, I no longer get anything. And
he just play with the wrapping paper?
Yeah, he just played with the wrapping paper. Like, he'd open it, and then he was just like, I don't even know what this is for. I just like the wrapping paper, and that's cool. And that was it, man. I ate my fill of too much shit, and now I'm probably going to pay for it in 2016. So,
and that's the problem with the holidays. You eat so much food, and then you're just miserable for like, I've been miserable for the past 2 weeks. Just eating. It's not even just one day of eating where it's like, okay, I ate this much yesterday and today I'm fine. No, you eat the day of, then you eat the leftovers for like the next 4 days, and then by the time you finish the leftovers, it's time for the next holiday, and then like a whole new set of leftovers. It's disgusting. That's basically it.
All right, so did you get anything fun for Christmas? What did you get for Christmas? Some socks, some underwear,
what did I get for Christmas? Well, I got a pair of actually new gloves.
Oh, nice.
Still have not shipped.
Oh, okay.
I was told about it, but they just haven't shipped yet.
What gloves did you get?
New pair of twins gloves.
Oh, nice.
Obviously, they're orange, like everything else in my life. I don't know. What else did I get? Well, you sent me a sweet new mixer for this podcast.
Yeah, man.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah, because I'm a nice friend.
And then mostly just clothes.
Yeah, same here, man. I got a sweet new mixer, and that was pretty much something that I already knew I was gonna get. Got it. And then
my gloves. But why is it that once you pass like the age of, I want to say, like 27, all you get for Christmas is clothes?
Because, man, I don't know. Because the toys become more expensive for older folk. It's like it's no longer, you know, like toys that are like going to be like $5 or $6. It's no longer like a G.I. Joe. You know, it's now
I just want a Harley. That's the only toy I want is a Harley.
Yeah. And it's like, I wanted a new mixer. Oh, well, like it's like a top of the line mixer. It's like $200-something plus a new microphone that happens to be like $500. And it's like, my wife just kind of, you know, gives me a big middle finger and says, yeah, no, that's not happening. So
you're on your own.
Yeah. So, yeah, man, that's pretty much it. If we were balling, you know, if we had like millions of sponsors that were paying us like I would say like $20,000 an episode would be pretty good. You know, if we were getting that many fans, you know, people downloading like millions upon millions of downloads per every episode, then I think we could go for those bigger toys. But until then, it's just socks.
Socks.
Oh, man. So, yeah, my 2016 was just, I mean, I said my New Year's, just at home, spending time with the family. I think it was because my wife and I were like first New Year's really with the baby, first Christmas with the baby. We just kind of wanted to have everything in the family. So we didn't go anywhere special, you know, just stayed with my, you know, my parents live close by. A couple cousins live close by, so they came through, and that was pretty much it, man. Just kind of kept it low key this year.
Yeah, it was pretty quiet yeah. Holiday season.
Yeah, like I mean, once Lucas turns to of an age where you know he's gonna kind of understand a little bit more about what's going on around him. You know, we'll do the whole, you know, like my wife wanted to, like this is another thing, man. My wife wanted to go to Disney, and I kept on like, I don't want to take him to Disney. He's like 8 months old, man. Like I used to always hate seeing people take their 5 month old kid to Disney because I was like, he's not gonna remember this shit. It's pointless.
Yeah.
And it's like, and it's like a kid gets uncomfortable, man. And honestly, man, all they are doing, they're just shit and piss factories, man. That's it. That's all they're gonna do for like the first couple of months, and that's it, man.
So what do you think? Like maybe 5 more years, Uncle Vinny could take him out for a glass of Jameson on New Year's.
Ah, oh, man, I put Jameson in his bottle, puts him right away, puts him right to sleep, man.
Be careful what you say on here. You never know.
Yeah, no, just joking.
You'll
man.
Have the social workers at your house in the morning.
Yeah, what are you on your third beer right now? On your third beer?
Yep. Just out. Just oh, nice. How long ago did we start?
Well, you were drinking when we were working on the levels of making sure the levels were all correct.
Just one of those days where you just need a beer. It just happens.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, man. So that was pretty much it, man. Like real, real low key. And I'm kind of I'm looking forward to 2016. 2015 was, you know, it started out real cool, got really bumpy towards the end there. Personally, like, you know, that's kind of why we took that break and everything, man. And I'm kind of real happy to put it behind me, even though, like, you know, one of the blessings was obviously Lucas being born and everything. But I'm looking forward, man. I'm looking forward to 2016. I'm gonna tackle this big time. I want us to do really well on this podcast, man. I want us to work really hard on growing this thing and getting people to listen and, you know, getting people to tune in and you know, hopefully we'll get some suggestions from fans and everything and just talk to some really cool, interesting people and keep Muay Thai growing because that's the other thing, man. I think Muay Thai's consistently been doing well. I think I'm kind of happy of where it's going. I hope it continues to pick up. I hope Glory, you know, kind of gets better and this ESPN thing works out for them. Lion Fight is going to put on a good show for the start of the year, so I hope that one goes well, and then we'll see where we go from there. But I'm definitely looking forward to 2016, man.
Oh yeah, this is definitely going to be a good year.
Yeah,
2015 wasn't a bad year, but it wasn't, you know, the greatest. So
yeah,
I you know, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't happy that it was over.
Oh yeah, same thing with me, man. Like I said, it started out well and everything, man, and then just after that, it was a little bit bumpy towards the end there for me, and went through a lot of stuff. Like you know, we were talking about it, had like little health issues, shit here going on here and there, and I was even talking about it on the podcast, and then it just turned out to be, you know, it just turned out to be kind of annoying, and finally now I'm behind, putting it behind me. Huh?
All negativity behind.
Yeah, exactly.
We just don't talk about it anymore.
Exactly. 2016 is going to be all positivity and Muay Thai and kickboxing and like talking about people punching themselves and punching other people in the face, not themselves.
Maybe some t-shirts too. What do you think?
Yeah, man. We're going
to
get back
to talk about t-shirts.
I like to talk about t-shirts, man. I want to really this year, we did our Muay Thai is Life shirt. It did really well. I was really happy about it. A lot of you guys seem to like it. I actually got on our Twitter, somebody on our Twitter wrote that they wanted us to do another round of these shirts. That might be a little difficult because I kind of did a really stupid thing.
Because Eric's an asshole.
Because all the designs I did a bunch of designs, and then I kind of accidentally erased one of my external hard drives and kind of lost a bunch of stuff. So I would have to like redesign everything from scratch to do a new Muay Thai is Life, the same one that we put out earlier. So I might do it because I know people liked it and it did well. We sold it pretty well, so I don't want to not, you know, put that one out again. So I'm thinking about that one and then a couple of other things. Also, Vinny's been since 2014. Vinny's been actually asking me to help him out with a logo, so I'm hoping to get that one done this year.
See what I mean?
So yeah, so but this year definitely we want to make sure the Muay Thai is Life brand, which is obviously now, you know, what you know, Striking Corner is our is really what we're going to focus on. Muay Thai is Life is the brand, and really trying to get do the shirts and, you know, get them out for people, and hopefully we can build this into an army of people that follow the show and like the show and also want to do, you know, buy our shirts and represent Muay Thai wherever they're at. We're really trying to do, I mean, I want this to be a movement, man. You know, that's really what I want Striking Corner to be about. I want it to be a movement about Muay Thai, not just about like Muay Thai in the sense of, you know, me, you know, you and I are like traditionalists in the sense that we love the tradition of Muay Thai. We love the passion of the sport. We don't just care about who wins, who loses, you know, when the next event is, you know, who's fighting on it. It's really, you know, you're an instructor, you know, I'm an assistant instructor at the gym I'm at, you know, where I teach. And it's that thing too, you know, the teaching, seeing the new people get into it, you know, whether they're younger, older, whatever, you know, trying to open the door to people falling in love with the sport and falling in love with it just as much as we are, you know? So, that's really what I want to do with us, you know, this year, really want to pay attention to that and really try to get Muay Thai, continue to get Muay, you know, continue to get, make people passionate about this sport.
Yes, we'll try to create more Muay Thai snobs, basically.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, not Muay Thai snobs, man. I don't want Muay Thai douchebags, you know. Be like, you know, I don't want people to walk around and then like, if we ever have a fan run into us, that he's gonna like why to me or something, or he's gonna consistently why at me or whatever, or that he's gonna like say Sawadi Kap because that's, you know, because we're in Thailand. You know, that's the thing is, man, the funny thing is, I mean, I'm not shitting on people that do that because I know there's probably a lot of people that do that, but I have actually grown out of that, man. You know,
I also have.
Yeah. Cause when I first went to Thailand and then came back and I was like, oh yeah, man, I'm only eating Thai food and I'm, you know, when I go to Thai restaurants, I'm going to, you know, try to talk to them in Thai. And then the guy's like, dude, the guy's like, I'm from Miami, man. I was born here. You know, it's like, you don't have to say Sawadi Kap to me. So anyway, man. So yeah, like that kind of stuff, like you kind of grow out of it, but I like the tradition and all that type of stuff. And I want to, you know, you have to keep it like it's something we've discussed on the podcast a lot. You want to keep Muay Thai traditional, you know, but there's a lot of things that in order for Muay Thai to grow in the United States, you can't expect that people that have no idea about Muay Thai are going to automatically know the culture and be like super respectful of people that wear the Mong Kong and the Prajad and all that stuff. And that's not saying that I don't want them wearing that. I definitely want everybody to you know, stay with those traditions, but it's like, you can't expect people to automatically like know what the heck that is. And, you know, especially with like the Muay Thai music, some people hate that stuff, man. You know, some people, the music, they can't stand it. And in a way, you know, the like different organizations have done a good job in saying, hey, well, you know, we're going to take out the music because that's something that we don't feel the Americans don't tune in, or they don't like it, you know, when they're there. So you got to, in order to make it grow, I understand that you got to make some changes. But at the heart of it, I still want it to remain, you know, that tradition, because at the end of the day, man, it isn't our sport. It is another country's sport, but. And so we want to kind of pay homage to that, but also there is now an American Muay Thai scene that is alive and well, you know?
See, for me, I don't really care so much about Y-ing or the Y crew or the music. I don't care too much about that stuff. I care about the technique.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my thing. That's what I care about, because Muay Thai is beautiful, mm-hmm. especially if it's done right. Mm-hmm. It's such a beautiful art, and the technique itself is just beautiful. So I care more about the way you look when you're doing it, not the way you are like whying and playing the music. I will never play the music in my gym because I think that's absolutely ridiculous.
Well, I mean, and I think some people do that, but I also stopped doing that. When I first got back from Thailand, you know, for the first time, and I was super excited about, you know, discovering Muay Thai. And I mean, I had already discovered Muay Thai, but I went to Thailand to get even deeper into it. And I came back and I was like playing, you know, Thai music in the gym and everything. And it gets to a point where you're just like, it's not, I don't know how to put it. I guess it's just kind of, you're not being real.
Yeah, and then it's the same 15 minutes of music over and over and over again.
Exactly. So I got to this point where I was just like, you know what, man, leave that for the fights. And if the promoter wants to do it, cool. If he doesn't want to do it, doesn't have to do it.
Yeah, I enjoy hearing it during a fight.
Yeah, yeah.
But not while training. I don't think it's necessary.
Yeah, yeah. And then it's like we've talked about, you know, you don't need to lie to every single trainer, you know, especially if he's not from Thailand. So it's like, if I see you, I'm not going to like lie to you, you know, or whatever, even though, you know, you're a Muay Thai trainer as well. So I don't know. I mean, there's just some certain things that I think, I don't want to come off of saying that all those things are bad or anything, but it's just something that I felt like I grew out of it this year. You know, it was just like, I want to make sure that Muay Thai grows in the sense that the fights are Muay Thai. The judging is correct. That's another thing that I'd really be a stickler about, you know, that the judging is correct, that the right people are winning, that the right people are winning their fights, that the things are being, you know, they're giving the points correctly. Because, you know, that's the one thing that I think that is still kind of a black eye of the sport still a little bit, is that, you know, we have so many guys that are, and especially, you know, us that we've trained fighters and we know fighters and we've talked to all these fighters on the striking corner, and you hear so much about bad decisions or they get robbed or things like that, and it's because it's just bad judging. It doesn't have anything to do with, you know, with whether or not they're good fighters or not. They're fantastic fighters and they're putting in all this work and they're winning fights, but then to be robbed of a win and a potential, you know, like win bonus, especially when we're talking about like they don't get much paid that well in Muay Thai as it is, to lose some money simply because, you know, you got robbed of a decision. You know, that's something that I hope changes in 2016. And we're going to talk a lot about that too. And hopefully it changes this year as well, man. You know,
you know, what drives me more crazy than anything.
What
is the casual fight fan who knows nothing about the sport? And that's any sport, whether it's boxing, Muay Thai, MMA, it's usually the first one to say, you shouldn't have let it go to the judges.
Yeah.
It's nothing that drives me crazier than that, because most of those people have never been in a ring and don't know what it's like and don't know that it's not so easy to just knock someone out on call.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not to bash MMA, but obviously we're a Muay Thai podcast, and I mean,
before you continue, you know I'm all about bashing MMA.
I know you are. I happen to watch MMA, and it's okay with me. I know you, and I know Vinny's going to be my main detractor when I bring up MMA at any time. But you know, yeah, it's you see that a lot more in MMA, but the reason you see that in MMA is because of the fact that it grew so fast. The growth of it has been so exponential that obviously people that are watching it, the majority of people that are watching it, aren't going to be as well versed in the sport, you know, like, so you're going to get a lot of just casual fans all the time because it's just big. It's what's going on. I mean, and that's what's going to happen. You're going to have these just like people that have no idea about fighting, commenting on fighting. With Muay Thai, I think the thing right now that we're enjoying is really it's still a niche sport where a lot of us that are doing it, like especially a lot of us that are watching these fights, a lot of us that are tuning into a Lion fight or to a Glory are really people that are exposed to the sport for many different reasons. We're either doing it, we know somebody that does it, or, you know, they're fighters themselves or were one-point fighters themselves. So you still have that kind of respect for the technique and understanding what's going on and everything. And you don't have, like, sort of that casual fan yet. But, dude, at the same time, we're going to need that casual fan at the end of the day. And hopefully one day you're going to have that asshole fan that, you know, somebody's going to turn around and be like, dude, you have no idea what you're talking about. But at least that would be the day that more people are tuning into our sport. So that you're going to end up getting that one day. And hopefully sooner.
And maybe eventually what will happen is just like all these MMA fans, they put on a tap out shirt.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they know everything.
Uh-huh.
maybe eventually they'll put on a Muay Thai's Life shirt, and then they'll know everything about Muay Thai.
Hey, well, that'd be great, man. I hope they come in droves then and just keep purchasing Muay Thai shirts, you know. And then just like, you know, paint, and what is it, just bleed across their chest, you know. And you know, so I hope we get that at some point. But yeah, man, yeah, I mean so to talk MMA, Vinny, how was your did you enjoy the couple of fights a couple of weeks ago, the Ronda Rousey, and then, you know, the Conor McGregor and Aldo? And
actually the Ronda Rousey fight I saw the next morning on Facebook.
Oh, okay.
I don't really give a shit to watch the events. So I saw it the next morning, and I enjoyed it just because Holly Holmes, is her background is kickboxing. So yeah. Obviously I enjoy a kickboxing knockout.
Yeah.
McGregor and Aldo, I actually did see that fight live because I just happened to be eating at Buffalo Wild Wings and it was on the TV.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it really wasn't much of a fight. Oh shit, that was a great fight. Like, it was 14 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, it wasn't that great. So
yeah,
I mean, that's the only one I really paid attention to, anyways.
Yeah, yeah. Man, there was a couple good fights before that one. But anyway, yeah, I mean, it's like I said, man. I mean, I watch it because I realize that it's in a lot of ways, you have to realize that because of MMA, man, I mean, I don't know if we would be where we're at with Muay Thai if it wasn't for MMA.
You know what I don't understand? The one part I don't get is all these people that watch MMA.
Yeah.
Say it goes to the ground and it gets to what usually happens is one guy just laying on top of another.
Yeah, yeah.
Every single one of the ends are booing and talking shit. So that's when I'm like, then why the fuck don't you just watch Lion Fight or Glory?
Yeah.
It's the same shit, except without the two guys laying on top. get it. Like, just,
yeah.
If that bothers you so much and you're going to sit there and boo and talk shit, then just watch a sport that doesn't happen in.
Yeah. But I mean, I it could be that, or it could be that people don't enjoy the jiu-jitsu part of it and want just like ground and pound or something like that.
Yeah, that's probably it.
You know, be like, "Oh, I can kick this guy while he's on the ground," kind of thing. But, you know, I don't know, man. It's a different demographic. I mean, at the same time, there's some people that are just into it because it's the popular thing right now. I mean, there's a lot of like diehard MMA fans that, just like our diehard Muay Thai fans, are tuning in because they're really, really into the sport, you know. But there are a lot of fans that are just tuning in because it's the in thing, and they have no fucking clue what's going on, whether in the striking realm or in the ground realm. Huh?
I said, why? Because MMA is trending?
Yeah, this is because it's trending, dude. Like, that's what we want to do with Muay Thai. We got to get it trending. And then, you know, like I said, we'll have to explain, like, what the heck the guy's doing, like, what these guys are doing later. You know, what the Prajad is, what the Mongkon is, or, you know, oh, okay, what they're doing in the clinch, you know, that, oh, this is this type of elbow, this type of knee, whatever. So, I mean, it's the evolution. I mean, I think right now, but I think, like I said, I don't think Muay Thai would be where it is without MMA. But if you look at, man, I mean, like right now, one of the things that I like a lot is if you look at MMA right now, man, like let's say especially with the female division, like, you know, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, you know, she's like, dude, she's a Muay Thai fighter, you know, and she's like tearing girls up with her striking. She's just destroying them. You know, and that's something cool to see too, because I mean, a lot of people that are in the know about Muay Thai and kickboxing know that she's a Muay Thai fighter, you know, and that she was a Muay Thai fighter, and she's actually been beat. Like, the thing is, it's funny because in the UFC she's undefeated, and she's like kicking everybody's ass in the UFC, all these girls. But in the Muay Thai world, she wasn't even the best Muay Thai girl. She had been beaten, you know. So it goes to show you the level that we have in Muay Thai that isn't appreciated. You know, that there is people in the Muay Thai game that, you know, there are a lot of people in the Muay Thai game that could, you know, give these people in the MMA a run for their money, but they're deciding to stick to their guns, you know? So with that said, dude, we have somebody who, you know, we have a very special guest for this first episode of 2016. And it's somebody that has actually decided to do what we were talking about just now, about sticking to his guns, staying close to the roots of what he loves, which is Muay Thai. And he's decided that, you know, when people asked him, whether he wanted to do MMA. You know, he said that he wanted to that MMA was played out, that MMA was so last year, man, that he wanted to stay fly and do Muay Thai. So, you know, we have our good friend Justin Greskowitz is going to be on the show, and we will be right back with him in just a few minutes.
The Striking Corner.
All right, so we're here with Justin Greskowitz, basically a man who has been involved in the Muay Thai game for a long, long time. To me, you're definitely one of the guys that is pretty much one of the East Coast, to me, an East Coast legend, in the sense that you've been around the game for quite a bit. You had quite a few, I guess, legendary sort of you know, trios of fights, a rubber match and here and there with Mark DeLuca and Taran Hazanov, you know, other East Coast guys. But then you've also fought a lot of guys in your career, man, some big names, you know, such as Malapet. You fought Kevin Ross. You fought my good friend Bryce Krause. You fought a lot of guys throughout your career, man. And you've really been the type of guy to take on all comers. Never afraid to face a challenge, such as, you know, guys like Liam Harrison and things like that as well. So so the last time I talked to you, Justin, you know, was a couple years ago, a couple years back. You were still at Cool Hearts Muay Thai. And since then, you now opened up your own gym called Stay Fly Muay Thai. So talk to us a little bit, you know, about what's been going on, man. You know, it's new year, 2016. Tell us what's been going on with Justin in this past year.
Yeah.
Which has been 2 days.
Yeah, man. Yeah, right. In the super eventful, like, 46 hours of the new year. We're just about it was just about 2 years ago that I opened up my spot. We have our two-year anniversary on the 6th, so it's been absolutely hectic. I don't know if you guys have ever been anywhere really close to anybody opening up, like, their own business and you know, seeing the absolute chaos of all that, but I can tell you it ain't pretty sometimes, man. No, but it's been really wild. This last year in 2015, we're talking about the past now. I mean,
yeah.
2015, it's been, you know, finally kind of falling into its own and, you know, head above water, paying its own rent. Still not really making like money doing it, but I guess, you know, I'm in the wrong place to be making money anyway, if I'm in Muay Thai. Right. Yeah. But yeah, it's awesome, man. I have an awesome group of people there. A few killers that are kind of up and comers that I'm real stoked about their fight career coming up. But some dudes that really helped me out a lot. And honestly, as chaotic and difficult and stressful as everything has been, I wouldn't change it for the world. You know, there were many, many times when I wasn't sure how I was going to pay, you know, rent and how I was going to keep the lights on and how, you know, I wasn't going to have to start selling my body, or whatever, but, or start slanging rock or something. Right. But you know, with all that chaos and with all that difficulty, I wouldn't change it for the world, man. It's been a great, great ride so far. And I can't wait for the future. And like, I think that, you know, the beginning, you know, you start figuring stuff out a little bit and you start to do things the way you want to do it. And you figure out what works and what doesn't work and what's important to you and how to make things that are important to you, like, work in a business sense. So, you know, I feel like we're kind of just at that point. So now it's, I think, like, onward and upward, you know. People know me as a fighter because, you know, I've gotten beat up by scary guys before and been put on fights, you know, that people, you know, may have enjoyed watching. So, you know, now they start to know us as a team and as a gym. So it was, you know, it's starting to become more popular, and there's more competition with gyms, and, you know, there's even in my little spot, there's right in Philly. I mean, it's not like Philly's a super small town, but it's a pretty small town when you've been here for a little while. And in my, like, right in my little area, there's like four Muay Thai gyms and like MMA gyms in like a 12 block radius, and it's kind of like, you know, it's a pretty saturated market at this point with MMA and Muay Thai, but you know, we have something that's kind of specific and something kind of special that we've sort of built a little bit of a brand, and people start to know us as a gym now, not just know me, you know. But
definitely, so, definitely,
yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. I mean, I really like the name of your gym, though. I'm with names, man, because I opened my gym October. We just passed 2 years.
Nice.
And I just went to, you know, just simple route, just called it Staten Island Muay Thai, whatever.
Yeah.
But
simple's good. Simple's good because people know where it is and know what you do. You know, that's what's important. Yeah. Right?
No, exactly. But I've always wanted to have like a cool name, and I think about it every day.
Yeah, and he always runs them by me, and then some are absolutely terrible. Where I just, you know, answer back with like a one word text, just like no, dude, no.
Absolutely not. But, get back to the drawing board. No, man, yeah, honestly, I think so. State Fly Muay Thai to me. So I'll tell you guys a little bit more about the story of like how we got started and how I opened my own gym and stuff like that in just a minute. But it wasn't ever supposed to be my own place. So it was one of those things that I was actually expecting it to be with my old coach, and it was never going to not be Cool Hearts. But then he kind of decided not to be a part of it. And it was one of those things that it was very, very difficult to find a name. And I actually own the domain name Muay Thai Stay Fly. And it was one of those things that, you know, it was sort of a joke with some of my buddies that, you know, people would be like, oh, you know, like, don't, you know, when are you going to start doing MMA? And I'm like, nah, man. I'm like, dude, MMA is like, that shit's tired, yo. I'm, you know, I'm going to stay fly, man. Muay Thai, stay fly, bro. So it was one of those things that, like, it's, you know, I think that it's cool because it's like, you know, kind of like a little bit, like, it's super silly and it's like ridiculous. And that's kind of me. But at the same time, it's sort of the whole like idea behind it is like kind of, you know, stay true to what's important to you and like, you know what you're made of and know what, you know, is important to you and don't even worry about what else is going on or like, making other people happy or, you know, fitting things to what's popular or anything like that. It's just kind of like, you know, stay the course, stay what's true to you. And that's, to me, you know, there's nothing, you know, besides donuts, I don't think that there's anything other that's more important to me than Muay Thai. I mean, but donuts are pretty important. But.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's cool, man. I think, and it says a lot about you as well. Like, you were just saying, stay part of Muay Thai. Muay Thai is the way. I mean, me and Vinny and I have pretty much more of the traditionalist type of guys as well. We've always loved Muay Thai. Muay Thai's our game, you know, and it's something that, you know, a lot of people also, you know, a lot of people are getting into MMA because MMA is kind of like where the money's at. It's like where, you know, that's,
I wish we got paid.
I mean, I think we all want that to get eventually where Muay Thai gets or whatever, But you know, that's cool that you stayed, and like you said, you stay true to yourself. I mean, and in the silliness of it is actually very you, because at the same time you are the purple people eater, man, the guy who always comes into the ring with purple hair, you know. So you know, it's something that's been your calling card. So that's that's very cool.
A ridiculous human, right? So I guess it's good to be a little silly, I guess.
Yeah. The first time I saw you fight, I think you did have green hair though.
Was that in Florida?
I'm not sure.
I'm not. Probably. I don't remember.
My first pro fight was in Florida. So I went purple. I guess we'll do that origin story now.
What event
was that? That was the Shindo Kumite.
Yeah, then it was, man.
Master Mirden. Yep.
Yeah. I actually know him very well because I beat the crap out of one of his students in one of his cards, and he like robbed me horribly. So anyway, but that guy is like infamous down here. But anyway,
I always like, it's important to me, and the, you know, I hate to like say that I'm old, but like the older that I get, the more I try to like really like live my life. You know, I am a Buddhist, and it's one of those things that I try my best to be a good Buddhist.
Well, how old are you, Justin?
I'm 163 years old, actually, which is crazy. I'm 31.
Oh, man, I'm 33. Don't say you're old, dude.
Yo, we're basically like has-beens, aren't we?
I'm 31.
I'm like super old. No, man, you are too. I hate to tell you, man, we're old now. But honestly, as I've gotten a little bit older and been around, you know, in my wise 31 years, I definitely try to give people the benefit of the doubt and not like encounter people from what I've heard about them or how, you know, everybody has a past and, you know, I have a past and I haven't always been that great of a dude and I've made a ton of mistakes that I'm, you know, super sorry for. And, you know, I'm always trying to be a better person than I was, you know, yesterday or last year. And I really hope that people can forgive me of my mistakes and like see past that and encounter me with the way that I'm encountering them. So when I meet people, I always try to give people the benefit of the doubt. Like,
yeah,
I try to be really like open and like, open-hearted, open-minded, and just really just deal with them the way that they're dealing with me. And I heard some horror stories about Mr. Mirdad back in the day, and I was like, oh, cool. Like, he's been really nice to me. He's putting on, you know, he wants to do the biggest thing in the world. And that to me has become a red flag. Like, when people want to do it, no, we're going to do it huge. It's going to be bigger than anything in the world, and everything's going to be awesome. And it's never, no one's ever going to see anything like that. It's like, well, maybe there's a reason why nobody's done it before. Like, maybe you need a little bit more money. Maybe we need a little bit more TV deals and stuff like that. You know, like, but, I know that, in the first event that I actually fought from twice. In the first event, I think I was the only one who figured it out that my check was like the only one that cleared. So everybody else's like check bounced, and everybody was like super pissed, and it took a long time for them to get paid. I didn't have that problem because my dad is the man. He's like a banker, and my bank was like super cool about like everything. Like, anytime I had like a check, they would just like give me cash. They wouldn't even wait for it to clear, whatever. So then my bank was like hounding his bank, and it was like totally out of my hands. And I was like, dude, I got paid. That's cool. Like, no problem. And I had no idea there was like any issue. But then I heard all these horror stories, and I was like, oh, that's a bummer, man. Cause that like could have been a cool event. And then like a couple years later, they did another one. It was like a year and a half later, they did another one. And I don't think that they had any repeat customers, like any repeat fighters other than me. I think everybody else like kind of swore off dealing with them. And it was a really small event. It was only a couple fights. But then, so the first time I fought down there, I fought and I had green hair. And that was when I fought this kid. I was fighting at 147 as an amateur. Most of my fights were at 155. Mm-hmm. And then I fought my last couple at 147. And that was all same day weigh-in, you know? So then I fought, as a pro, I got this opportunity to fight on the show in Florida, and they wanted me to fight that kid Mukai, who was fighting at 165 and was cutting down to 165, 170.
Mukai Moromo, the Canadian. Was it Mukai Moromo? Yeah, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, Mukai Moromo. And then I fought Shane Campbell not that like a little while before. I fought him twice as an amateur. I beat him once, and then I lost to him one time. Mm-hmm. And I knew that Mukai like wasn't quite Shane's level, but like was a tough, bigger dude. Mm-hmm. And I'd seen him fight, and I was like, dude, I got more experience. This dude, my Muay Thai's better. I'm gonna smash this dude. Yeah, he's big, but whatever. And I fought him, and he just shoved me around the ring and beat the balls off me and cut me like right at the bell at the end of the first round. It wasn't like a malicious thing. It like happened like right after the bell, but it wasn't like malicious. But
yeah,
I was bleeding my face off for the like. It was only a 3-round fight, and the game plan for me was, all right, he's hammering me, he's punching hard, and I'm just gonna eat his legs up. And like by the end of the third round, I was like ruining, like burying his legs. But it just was like, just it was only a 3-round fight. It just wasn't enough to finish it. Like all day, like after the fight, he was like limping around. There's like an interview with him like afterwards, and like they like stay on him like a little bit too long, and he like limps out of the camera. It's kind of funny, but so I was like, man, I knew it. Like I totally knew his legs were dog meat. Like, but it was just like he was just too big, too strong, and I was like, well, maybe just taking that step up in weight's not a good idea anymore. So I fought a little bit lighter than that for my next few of them. And but yeah, that was my first pro fight when I fought Mukai, and then that was. You know, it was my third pro fight that I went purple. And so my first pro fight, I lost to Mukai, and it was a decision, but I got cut. I just kind of got shoved around. I didn't get hurt, didn't get dropped, but man, did I get kind of hammered around a little bit by a dude who was just big and strong and super athletic and good.
Yeah.
And then my second pro fight was against DeLuca. And DeLuca, I actually knew DeLuca, knew his name and knew him like from seeing him around and stuff, because my old coach was Roger Balsamico, and DeLuca actually, he trained with Stefan Stratemeyer, and who was Rigel's student in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And Mark as a kid was one of Rigel's students too. So there was like this crazy amount of pressure on me for that fight. Like, you better not lose to my old student. And you know, and Mark definitely like, I mean, one of the things about Mark's not like a super big athletic dude.
Yeah.
He's just not like a big imposing, muscular shove you around dude.
Yeah. Just like for a little background. I mean, we're really tight with the guys from Pitt. And I remember we went up Vinny and I, we went up and trained with them and, you know, and everything. Yeah, Marcus, he's definitely not, I would say, like a guy that's strong, but he kind of like dazzles you a little bit with technical ability in a lot of ways.
He's just sharp, man.
Yeah, he's real
like
sharp.
Real good. He's been doing this as a kid, and his timing is super good, and he's just sharp. And like, you know, I had 24 amateur fights, and I had never been even remotely wobbled or hurt or anything. And I saw DeLuke, and I knew like I was bigger and stronger, and I felt like, you know, it was going to be my fight, whatever. And I was super confident, but there was a lot of pressure on me. And I just kind of like knew, I was like, I'm going to break him in half. You know, I'm super way bigger, stronger than he is. And he just like, his timing was like really good. It was a really, really close fight. And I was in New York, and in the fourth round, he put me down with like a right hand. And it was just like, I was throwing a kick, and it was like perfect timing. He just caught me. And like, I was pissed because I thought like, you know, I'm fine. Like I'm not wobbled at all. It was just was the right timing, but they counted me. And I was like, oh, that's going to be the difference. Cause I thought it was like 2-2 at that point.
Yeah.
And then fifth round, it was like 30 seconds left. Like kind of same thing happened. It was just perfect timing with the right hand and folded me. And like that one, I think they should have counted me, but I got up and I was totally fine, totally ready to go. And they waved it off. And I was like heartbroken. I was like, oh my God. Like, I was like, you know, it is, as a competitor, like you'd rather die in the ring than have somebody tell you to stop. So I that was like a really, really tough loss for me to stomach. So I was 0-2 as a pro starting. And then, after a really good, solid amateur career, I went 0-2 as a pro. And then it took me a little while to get my third fight. And like a few months later, I ended up fighting, in New York, a dude from Florida, this dude named Ray Cole, who I'd seen fight on the Shindo Kumite. He was the same night that I fought my first pro fight. I'd seen him fight. I knew he was good. And I knew he had like been around a bunch and had like real good like Muay Thai.
Another one of our good friends, man. You're just fighting all our friends.
Dude, we all like each other, man. Yeah. So Ray's a really good dude. Yeah. Like, I know, and he's one of those guys that got some cool opportunities too. And Mark's got some cool opportunities too. Like,
you know,
being nice to people and being good to people. Like sometimes, you know, you have the right friends and you get a lot more opportunities than some other people that maybe, you know, treat other people not so great. And I honestly, like, you know, I really try to treat people well now, and I've gotten a lot more opportunities in the last couple of years when I've been on my own. That because people don't like always want to work with you because of whatever reason, or don't want to talk to you, don't want to deal with you. Like, however you know, whatever. So honestly, like, I think Mark got some cool opportunities. He got to fight, like, you know, in Scotland with, you know, he got to fight, like, you know, some cool places. And I was always like jealous to see it. Like, dude, how are these guys getting these opportunities? And, same thing with like, you know, Ray, I think he was like sponsored by like Fairtex, and he was like, you know, hooked up, had some like a cool Thai trainer, and like, you know, was doing some cool stuff.
Yeah.
And, they had me up on Friday night fights, and, you know, I live in Philly, which is like still like a 2-hour drive to New York. You know, plus traffic and stuff. We're not in New York, you know, it's not the same. It's not like, that ended up kind of being like my home turf, like, especially as a pro, because I started fighting on those shows all the time. But the first Friday night fights I fought on was my third pro fight. That was against Ray Cole. And kind of on paper, I guess I was the underdog on that one, because he had a little bit of experience, whatever. And I did really well. I thought it was one of those fights. I felt great. It took me a little while, like I said, to get another opportunity after being like 0-2 as a pro. There was a lot less pro fights back then, and there just was way less opportunity.
Yeah, and that was back in the day when there was still not full Thai rules, right? It wasn't, you know, now that was still, they were no elbows or nothing.
No elbows, yeah. So there was, I've had a bunch of fights in New York with no elbows. I'm probably now, like, and that was always a gripe about East Coast dudes is, oh, it's not real Muay Thai. There's no elbows, you know? And that was like always a thing, you know, that West Coast dudes especially like would always kind of like hold against us, like, oh, it's not real Muay Thai. And that's like, you know, it's no fault of our own. Like, New York is crazy. Like, New York, there's no athletic commission in New York. There's no, like, dude, my pre-fight medicals were like, all right, get this doc to fill out your physical form. You know, make sure it's a month prior. And I'm like, okay. And like, as a professional, and you'd show up, no blood work, no, you know, CAT scan, no eye exam, nothing. You'd show up and like the physical was like, all right, remember these three things, like a ball, a tiger, and a cow. And then like they'd like be like, all right, how do you feel? I'm like, good. They're like, all right, what were those three things? I was like, a ball, a tiger, and a cow. They're like, you're good. They're like, smack you in the back. They're like, how you feel? I'm like, okay. And they're like, all right, you're good to fight. I'm like, well, all right, cool. Like, that was like the entirety of the medical. So honestly, like, you know, there's, it's cool, like, as an amateur and as a beginner level pro, like, you just want to fight. You want to fight all the time. And like now, like, I guess I'm getting old. But I'm super more into like commissions and organizations that really do their best to keep the fighters safe and to make sure people are like going about the right things. You know, blood work is important. You know, last thing I want to do is get HIV or like Hep C or something because I punched somebody with it, you know. But so there's actually now, even in New York, they just started to do, on full rolls fights, they started to do blood work and stuff. But dude, I had like 20 pro fights in New York with no blood work at all. And it was like, you know, just complete, like, how you feel? All right, cool. You're good. Good fight. Good. Nice. Go. Like, it was just crazy, man.
Yeah.
And like the eye exam was like a card, like they hold a card, like a foot in front of your face. Like, what about the small one? I'm like, dude, it's like 4 inches in front of my face. I can read it. Like, so it's like, you know, I'm not going to be reading in the ring. Like, it's not that big a deal. But it was cool. Like when they started to do stuff like full rules and stuff like that. But yeah, when I fought Ray, it was still not full rules. But that was my first, and you know, I had 24 amateur fights and I was 0-2 as a pro. And that was my first pro win. And that was the first time I had purple hair. So I was like, well, I got to stick around with it. I got to keep this purple hair. So, it was also the first time I ever put anybody away with hands. I dropped him at the end of the second with a right hand. And he had like, I ended up hitting him and thank God it wasn't like a lasting thing, but he couldn't see. Like it was one of those things. I don't know if it was detached retina or what it was, but I hit him and like when he got up, he just couldn't see anything. Like it was right at the end of the second round. So when he sat down, they waved it off in between because he couldn't see. But it wasn't like an eye poke. It was on the chin, and then he could, like, I walked over to him like after the fight, and he kind of like looked right next to me and said like, thank you. And I was like, I'm right here, dude, not over there. But it was definitely weird. And you know, he's a good dude. I haven't been in close contact with him. He's not somebody that I've really kept up with, or we've not been in the same like circles, but you know, anytime I've seen him or talked to him, we've been really, really friendly to each other. And I do totally wish him the best. I know he's kind of like more of a coach and a business owner now, I think, than fighting a lot, but he's always seemed like a really nice dude. You end up fighting a lot more people that you really like than anything else, you know, in the sport. So.
All right, everybody. So you can actually catch the second part of our interview with Justin Greskowitz next week here on the Striking Corner. Remember, you guys can catch us on strikingcorner.com, on Stitcher, iTunes, SoundCloud, and you will hear the second part of our interview with Justin, the Purple People Eater, Greskowitz.
You've been listening to The Striking Corner with Eric Rivera and Vinny Scotto, your source for Muay Thai and kickboxing news worldwide.